Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey EU Startups, if you're running a startup like me, you have more than enough on your plate. So when a prospect asks if your company is ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliant, you're probably thinking, how the heck are we going to do this? We don't have the time, we don't have the manpower, and we definitely don't have the know-how. That's where Sitel comes in. With our automated platform and in-house expert to manage the entire process for you, you'll get compliant super fast. Compliance has never been easier.
So if you need help with compliance, visit sitale.ai/EU startups. That's sitale.ai/EU startups for $1,000 off your first framework. Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My next guest is Christian Noske, a partner at NGP Capital. NGP backs companies from Series A onwards, and their current portfolio includes antibiotics, gray matter robotics, Lime, Get Your Ride, and Security Scorecard, while their exits include Deliveroo, Xiaomi, Moovit, Kaltura, and many more. Christian, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me, Marcin.
Amazing. We finally made it. We had to postpone twice, different reasons. You had your baby boy born, then you had a leg surgery, like intense events in your life over the last 7 weeks, but we are here. We made it. Christian, so let me ask you the first question then. NGP Capital is, you know, a VC that's had one of the longest run in the market. What's your secret to longevity?
Yeah, no, great question. And maybe also a step back on that. We're around for 20 years, but we haven't been operating in the same way for 20 years. We had five different funds and each of the funds had a different bit of a focus. And why I'm saying that is I think this is part of the secret. If you just stay the same, if you just try to do the same for 20 years, you will probably not be competitive in this fast moving market. I mean, now even faster than ever. So we really adjusted with every fund according to the market environment. Back then, it was a lot of B2C. I mean, if you now look around, which VC is actually investing in B2C these days or is focused on B2C? There's very little. And so we made the transition, and now we're doing a lot of deep tech, and we always had invested in hardware over the 20 years, but now this is actually cool and sexy. Everybody talks about it, about AI and robotics, and this has been part of our DNA for long, and so we're very excited where everything is heading now. I think the other thing is one element that I'm observing in the market often is you have the founders, like, you know, whatever, two, three founders, and they're sticking to their control and to their power. I think we had a nice kind of development of talent also in the firm. We, two of the founding partners, they moved on and did other things. One or two others, they're still around here, but we have three out of five investment partners are kind of the new generation, came kind of later. And I think that's super important to continuously get new talent in. I mean, that's the same advice we're giving startups. So it's also true for us.
Yeah, sounds good. I 100% agree. And actually, I wanted to compliment you because the way you speak and answer the question is very energetic and refreshing as for a person who just had the baby boy born 7 weeks ago. Congrats on that. Keep it up this way. Christian, you've ridden the wave from, you know, mobile phones to AI-powered Meta optics. Which shift, and you just mentioned, you know, like kind of shift that you made towards investing in deep tech as well. Which shift felt like the biggest bet or the biggest pivot for you?
Yeah, I think back then the B2C to B2B was probably just the largest if you just come kind of top down. But But I would say the hardest thing, we really had to speak a lot in the team, and we were back and forth, like investing in hardware. I mean, the general VC narrative has been for a very long time, investing in hardware is hard. I mean, it's always the funniest thing people like to say, but it's also, is that actually a VC-backable industry? Can you make kind of returns that we expect when we're investing in companies? And so, when we looked at space tech, which is for us in that deep tech bucket, there was this extreme thing. I mean, even longer, like you're shooting stuff into the space, which is for all intents and purposes still a new space, pun intended. And so I think here we had a lot of discussions. We decided we actually, due to the last 20 years, where we invested in edge compute and other hardware aspects in B2C and in B2B, we felt we had the right ingredients to be successful there. But I would say for me, that felt like really stretching it. And we had a lot of conversations. And otherwise, I think we kept on having a kind of trying to be creative in our own world. We had invested some in health tech and kind of at even some yoga app at some point. I mean, the company didn't go anywhere, but, you know, we tried things out. And I think if you stop trying things out, if you kind of fixed mindset and you stop having this growth mindset, then I think all those new trends and technologies, they will feel overwhelming, and then they might feel like something to overcome. But because we always tried to have that, I would say it felt natural. It didn't feel like a big thing to force ourselves to.
Nice. Sounds good, Christian. If you actually mentioned space tech, you've backed giants like, you know, UCVAP, Babel, and the exploration company. What's the common thread when you look at your favorite portfolio companies?
Yeah, it's maybe a cliche answer, but you always have the founder.
Yeah.
It's but maybe double clicking on that. It's not just a founder, but it's this unique DNA, and especially in Europe, I would say, because we're in Europe here. So let's bring the European perspective. I lived in the US for 10 years, and there it's maybe a bit more common. But we, as a global firm at NGP, we listen to U.S. founders, and they're super energetic. They're like, there is no mountain too high. It's you go in that, and you will conquer it. In Europe, sometimes I think we're missing this energetic, like, can-do attitude, and this like super no mountain is high enough type of vision. And Helen, the CEO of the exploration company, has all of that. So she's not just a great founder, but she also has a great vision. And you can always think about like, what Apple is too big to bite in type of thing, but she has that attitude. Nothing is too big. Like, I want to build that Airbus for Europe in space tech. And I mean, this is a huge vision. And she also has the muscle to actually perform in that. Mm-hmm. So here you have something that we typically see more in the US and in Europe. You have it in one of the most challenging kind of hard industry, space tech.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, how many deep tech founders are actually women with four children? Like, right? There's just so much stuff coming together here, which is just so great. And we're really happy to be part of her journey and supporting her. And the same as with others, with the other examples and many more to mention, the founder story and why people are doing it, why they're getting up every morning and motivate themselves. This is so important to know, because you know, you have options. The great founders can start at any large tech company and get a bigger salary for sure and have a better life, at least for a few years. But it's not in their DNA. So we double click on those things.
I couldn't agree more. You mentioning Helen. I had Helen on the show some time ago, and it was one of the most impressive people I've met in my life. And as you mentioned, like, actually one of the... like, what I want to ask you next was, you know, like, what's a founder story that left a mark on you? Like, not because of the outcome, but because of the journey. And so, like, I don't know if you want to tell anything more about Helen and her story, but hearing you choose her was like music to my ears, because I couldn't agree more, Christian.
Yeah, I think we have another of that here in Europe. I don't know if you had him on the show as well, Philip from Ejim. Munich-based companies are doing.
You have to make an intro then, if that's.
Happy to. He's a great guy. I mean, we were biased, but still, he's great. he's a unicorn by now. Started with gym equipment, so smart gym equipment might be. Uh-huh. And if you go to the gym in one of yours, and now they're having a kind of sports subscription business as well, so software plus hardware. Mm-hmm. And just trying to think back, I know it feels really long time ago, but there was something like COVID, right? And nobody could go to gyms. This was certainly a dead man walking business, because like it's physical, it's interactive, all the things that were forbidden.
Yeah.
Not only did Philip start the business with a super long-term vision and executed that really, really well, starting, we need hardware, but we will then go into software, we'll go into subscriptions, and having this maturity at young age and that kind of marathon runner-like attitude to it is super fascinating on the one hand. But then even when you're kind of hit in the face through COVID, where your whole business and fundamentals are at risk, and still executing really well and coming out of this even stronger, I would say that is a founder story that always we remind ourselves, grit and resilience, mm-hmm. how important that is and how you can build a, you have to have that to build a great business. And it was rewarded plenty afterwards. And we're really, really proud to be part of that.
Amazing. Christian, I'll remind you about the intro after the show, because we have to have him on the show then. Looking back, what was the most unsexy deal that turned out to be a blockbuster?
Yeah, unsexy always. If you ask the founder of those companies, I don't think anybody would say I'm unsexy. They feel like the most sexy thing, and that's maybe back to the founder thing. They just live it, and it's so fascinating, because the company I would mention here is a Danish company. Okay. They're called Nilt. So they are meta optic lenses. So kind of. I would say too scientific for most people to understand, uh-huh. including myself. But here, it's a super unsexy business. It's a hardware business. It's a business that is, for many intents and purposes, hard for VCs to get the head around. Mm-hmm. So those lenses can get into cameras, into phones, and all of that. So that's the application. And they were acquired end of last year for, I think, 350 or so, around that number, which was the sixth largest, actually, exit in Denmark, mm-hmm. Even though it feels like a smaller number given all the mega rounds we always talk about. But but still, it's an exit. It's real money flowing, and very happy founders and very happy acquirers. Mm-hmm. And why this story is so interesting, because it was super hard on the fundraising side for a long time. And then in the end, on the business side, I can't share the details here, but it just became so obvious that this will be big, that the company that acquired them had to do it. And it's one of those unloved diamonds in the rough that ultimately actually are great returns for mm-hmm. us, because we invested very early. And this is a great exit for us. And mm-hmm. I don't think people would have looked at this and say this is a sexy business or understand even what it is.
Nice. I love the story. But Christian, let's be honest. Is there a startup that got away, you know, and still haunts you? Every investor has one.
Too many. I mean, there is an NGP story that we often talk about, because when we discuss startups in the partnership and say, hey, should we do it? Is valuation too high? I mean, all those questions you discuss. Mm-hmm. When we say, remember when we looked at WhatsApp and they were valued at 800 million mm-hmm. and we passed.
Oh.
Passing at 800 million seems like, yeah, of course. I mean, that's a high valuation for a fund like ours. We typically invest around 100 million mark, maybe up to 200. But of course, we know the end of the story. So 800 would have been mm-hmm. a great return for us. But we passed. Mm-hmm. And there are a few others like that, where great companies have valuations that are a little bit ahead of them. And of course, you don't know which company is overvalued and which is have a high price because they're great companies at the time. But this is one that got away for NGP. For me personally, it's the same story with Uber. I mean, at the time back then, this was not 800, it was an 80 million valuation that we looked at back then. I was not at NGP yet. So those companies, you could say, haunt me, but also they are the reason why we stay paranoid. We tell our founders, you need to stay paranoid because you never know when that company comes around. And I think having those losses, so to say, keep us on our feet.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing. So NGP has been on the market for like 2 decades now. And looking ahead 20 years, another 2 decades, what's a bold prediction for where VC is headed and how NGP wants to lead the future?
Yeah, I think on the first side, VC, the future of VC. I mean, two general statements. I think what we have seen here with single GP VCs, I think that will be something to stay.
Yeah.
There's kind of Robin Haag, Gloria, Alex Stanley, and like also individuals that I really appreciate investing earlier than us, but really great solo GP VCs. And I think that with all the technology and kind of co-pilot AI, you can do a lot with those specialists that just have that gravitas. So I think that will be much more around, much more understood, much more supported in 20 years than it's maybe today. Second one, I would say the mega funds around the Andreessens and so on, I think it will be very hard for them in 20 years. I already see a lot of that in the market. Of course, they have a big brand name and so on, but there is something to be said around founders want to have a personal touch. They want to feel be part of something. And I think the generational change is also driving that. And I think the more specialized firms can do that better. So I would say, hopefully, we get a broader diversity and getting out of that a few large funds monopolizing a lot of the industry in terms of dollars raised and all of that. I think so. Those are generally maybe two statements on the large funds. I think they will be less important than today. On the very, very small or single GP funds, they will be more important. And then for NGP specifically, I think we started already 3 or 4 years ago now to really invest in technology. And I think for us, that will be continuously the future. We call the tool Q, so the letter Q from James Bond, kind of the entity that knows everything and comes up with those fantastic gimmicks. And we think investing in technology and really having automation that we can leverage beyond, okay, how do I reach out to this founder through ChatGPT type of pre-writing emails? I think a little bit deeper than that will be the future. Because if you double click on the VC industry today, most would say we actually using very little industry. We're really mostly operating like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and this should change. So I would say NGP will double click on that, and we will continuing be more focused on a few verticals rather than being a generalist and good for everything. But that last comment I want to make, and it's maybe a weird comment to be made given all the news in the last 2 weeks or even longer now, the globalization and helping companies to navigate going to the US, US companies going to Europe, even going to China, hopefully at some point. I mean, I'm a notorious globalist. I hope that we can get better to get back into that better world where we can have free trade and and work together. I think that will be better for everybody in the world. And wars happen when you stop talking. You know, that's my my point. And if we can invest in global companies, this will only increase kind of the quality of companies, and we hopefully can be part of those journeys.
Nice. I love it. I love that perspective. I can totally relate to it. Speaking of going global and speaking of trying different countries, let's talk about Europe maybe. You're a global fund, but you know, what role do you think Europe will play in the next big wave of innovation? And I ask this question to a few, like recently quite often to a few other guests. And there's like different answers. I'm curious to hear yours.
And I'm curious about your favorite answer as well, since you see so many answers. I would say you can hate everything that's going on right now, but I think it is potentially one of those wake-up moments for Europe. And why I'm saying wake up, because it has been talked a lot about where Europe is not so strong in. I think we're maybe lacking a little bit the opposite, where we say, what is Europe strong in and how can we channel that into something great? And I think it's important to really call out all those problems. And I think we have now a generation of founders and entrepreneurial talent, partially also coming back from Silicon Valley to wanting to be part of that journey of Europe. And I think that that is really encouraging for me. I think we have all the things that we need. We have diversity, which normally can drive better results and quality. We have great universities. They're spread out. So again, not one single point of failure. We have great talent. Entrepreneur talent is still something we need to get better in, but technical talent and ideas and inventions and all the things that startup live off, I think we're really good.
So what's missing, Christian?
What's missing is a political ecosystem that gets out of the way when it has to and gets in when it has to. And there is a bit of, and that's easy to say for me. I think there is a bit of a naive thinking sometimes. It's just you have to get out of the way all the time. But if you look at Silicon Valley, that actually never happens. So this is not the the reason for their success. SpaceX would not be here without government. A lot of companies would not be here without government. So it's really the how and what are we focusing on. The EU can play a very important role. Right now, unfortunately, they often play don't play a role or play a very slow role. And each country has too much friction to operate globally. We're in Germany here. I mean, we're notoriously known for our notary appointments where people have to sit in a room for 10 hours and literally read the documents. This is an example we heard many times. But I think to bring it down to a few points, I think bureaucracy, we need to get out. We need to have better immigration. We always talk about immigration is bad, but just because we have done it maybe one way and not a balanced way. And so creating more balance is important, and employee participation, and people need to get rich by doing 70, 80 hour weeks. This is what needs to happen. If you force everybody in mediocrity, then we will not get anywhere, because that money is reinvested. And this is how ecosystem starts. If you have an attitude that is in France, unfortunately, often rich people are bad people. They must have cheated somebody. Germany has the same attitude often. We need to get rid of that. We need to be happy for those people that create jobs around us. And that's a cultural change that will take decades to go, but we need to start somewhere.
Again, I love the answer. Christian, I have another question for you that I started asking recently, because so I recently figured that, you know, like things happen in life, right? And then like when you're in need for like some kind of knowledge or advice and reach out to people to get the advice from them or some knowledge that you're missing, that particular moment you may not receive it well, or maybe it's not the right moment to ask. So I figured that it's better to, you know, build this kind of a library of advice, of best piece of advices ahead. So then you have this like library of like the best advice from the best people out there. And whenever you need something, you just go there and it's already there. You don't need to ask, you don't need to like leave it to the momentum. So my question to you is, what's the best piece of advice that you ever got in your life?
In my life.
I know, it's a big one.
No, it's a big one. I would say just go in and be there, be present. I think that's maybe my favorite advice. Because there's a rat tail of things that come with that. If you're present, you have the chance actually to get input. You can listen to you observe. If you're not even present, all that beauty cannot happen, and you never know what happens for what reason. And So I think being present is ultimately what it comes down to for me, and was advised by my father. And it's a great advice that I'm still living by.
So block out the noise and be present.
Yeah, no, just say yes to things. You know, always reasons not to do things. Be present means show up, like go there and be there, and not just observe and being kind of from a far distance. Yeah. Think you already know it. So it is showing up for people, showing up for other people. Yeah. It's a pretty broad interpretation how I use it, but I would say that helped me.
I love it. What's the worst piece of advice you ever got?
Don't leave my corporate job. You know, my career started, and I'm really appreciative of everything I learned there. My job started at Bosch, you know, large, good German company, global company. I learned a lot there, and great people there. But when I was thinking, should I leave or should I not leave? Some people around me, more kind of German-minded, like a security-first type of mind, that they said, yeah, why would you do that? It's a secure job. You can basically stay there until you retire. Why would you leave there? Mm-hmm. The advice was, you know, like security is more important than the risk you can take and the reward you can take. And I think that was bad advice. I didn't take the advice. I had other advice, luckily, that encouraged me. But this was bad advice.
Nice. Thanks for sharing, Christian. This is going to be the last one, actually. I don't know if it's going to be the hardest one, but might be. If you want, I can go first and answer this question. It's kind of, but it maybe you'll be able to do that even from the get-go. So I would like you to describe your life, the rest of your life, in using just five words.
Five words?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really, really tough one, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to, if you want to.
You didn't share that with me before.
I would say more of that same, please.
I think healthy, long, surrounded by great people. Maybe that was one
nice.
Word.
Nice. I like it. I love it. Christian, this is it. This is a wrap of our podcast. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, and such a great conversation. I love it. I hope you loved it. I think people will love it. It will be out soon. I'll let you know when. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Martin. It was a pleasure to meeting you here and speaking about all those important questions.